जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारे जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारे यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरवन चारे यमुना तीरवन चारे जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारे जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारे यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरवन चारी यमुना तीरवन चारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य अष्टोत्तरस्थ श्री श्रीमरे श्री भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि ओ समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय हा गवेश दिया समल देवची हा गवेश दिया समल देवची हा गवेश दिया समल देवची हा गवेश श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13, Brahma Stealing the Boys and Calves, Text Number 21 and 22. 21. Tat tad vatsam pritan nitva tat tad goshte nivesya saha tat tad atma bhavad narajans tat tad sadma pravishtavan. O Maharaj Parikshit, Krishna, who had divided himself as different calves and also as different cowherd boys, entered different cowsheds as the calves and then different homes as different boys. Purport. Krishna had many, many friends, of whom Sridhama, Sudama, and Subho were prominent. Thus Krishna himself became Sridhama, Sudama, and Subho and entered their respective houses with their respective calves. Text 22, word meanings. Tat matara, the mothers of the respective cowherd boys, Venu Rava, because of the sounds played on flutes and bugles by the cowherd boys, Twara, immediately, Utita, awakened from their respective household duties, Uttapya, immediately lifted their respective sons, Dorbi, with their two arms, Parirabhya, embracing, Nirbharam, without feeling any weight, Sneha Snuta, which was flowing because of intense love, Stanapaya, their breast milk, Sudha Asavam, tasting just like a nectarian beverage, Matva, accepting the milk like that, Param, the Supreme Brahma, Krishna, Sutan, Apayayan, began to feed their respective sons. Tanmataro Venurava Tavodita.
Tanmataro Venurava Tavodita.
Uttapya Dorbi Parirabhya Nirbharam.
Uttapya Dorbi Parirabhya Nirbharam.
Sneha Snuta Stanya Paya Sudhasavam. Matva param brahma sutana papyayan. Tanmataro venurava twarotita. Uttapya dorbhi parirabhya nirbharam. Sneha snuta stana Stanya paya sudhasavam. Matva param brahma sutana papyayan. Excuse me, it's a payayam, not a papyam. Tanmataro venuravatra rotita. Uttapya dorbhi parirabhya nirbharam. Sneha snuta stanya paya sudhasavam. Matva param brahma sutana payayan. Tanmataro venurava twarotita. Uttapya dorbhi parirabhya nirbharam. Sneha snuta stanya paya sudhasavam. Matva param brahma sutana payayam. Tanmataro venurava twarotita. Uttapya dorbhi parirabhya nirbharam. Sneha snuta stanya paya sudhasavam. Param Brahma Sutana Payam. Tanmato Venuravat Parupita. Upnapyadopi Parirajya Nirbharam. Sneha-smita-stanya-paya-sudhāsavam. Matvāparam-brahm. Ladies. Tanmātaro-venuravat-parutita. Nutapyadobhi parirabhya nirbharam. Sneha-snuta-stanya-paya-sudhāsavam. Mutvā param brahma sutāna pāyayam. Translation. The mothers of the boys, upon hearing the sounds of the flutes and bugles being played by their sons, immediately rose from their household tasks, lifted their boys onto their laps, embraced them with both arms, and began to feed them with their breast milk, which flowed forth because of extreme love specifically for Krishna. Actually, Krishna is everything, but at that time, expressing extreme love and affection, they took special pleasure in feeding Krishna, the Parabrahman, and Krishna drank the milk from his respective mothers as if it were a nectarian beverage. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Although all the elderly gopis knew that Krishna was the son of Mother Yashoda, they still desired, if Krishna had become my son, I would also have taken care of him like Mother Yashoda. This was their inner ambition. Now, in order to please them, Krishna personally took the role of their sons and fulfilled their desire. They enhanced their special love for Krishna by embracing him and feeding him, and Krishna tasted their breast milk to be just like a nectarian beverage. While thus bewildering Brahma, he enjoyed the special transcendental pleasure created by Yoga Maya between all the other mothers and himself. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Text 21, we have the showing how Krishna is dividing himself in different ways. Each of the lines of the verse says tut tud, so it means this and that, or the different ones, or various, and so on, like that, separately. Tut tud. So we have tut tud vatsan, the various calves. Tut tud goshte, goshte or goshta. Goshta means the goshala. So the calves, different goshalas. Tut tud atma means the actual personalities themselves, the cowherd boys, different atmas. And tat-tat sadma. Sadma means their homes. So different cows, different boys, different cow sheds, different homes. Krishna has expanded himself into all of these. And, of course, Brahma, he's not sure what he's doing at this point. Lord Brahma, of course, we know this, the time difference here. One thing that's interesting, we talk about Brahma, of course, it's significant that Brahma is bewildered because of his exalted position. He's so far beyond us. That's why whenever he does anything that's a little off, it's very significant. This pastime, by the way, Prabhupada, I think, says in different places, a few moments, right? This is a few moments according to Brahma's time. Well, I did the calculation. Anybody want to venture a guess on how long those few moments were? You know, Madan? It is 1/100,000th of a second of Brahma's time. 1 year, one of our years, is 1/100,000th of a second of Brahma. So this gives you an idea. You say, well, how can anybody do anything in 1/100,000th of a second? So that's because it's Lord Brahma. That's why. He lives in a different sphere. Just like when we dream, we know how the time gets dilated in dreams. You may dream a few moments and it seems like it goes on and on and on. So somehow Brahma's conception of things, his ability, his constitutional nature is that he can do something in 1/100,000th of a second and be conscious of it and aware of what's going on. So he's an extraordinary person. He's almost out of this world. So when something happens to him, then it's significant, of course. Of course, he's significant in other ways, different things that he does. So this is going on. Lord Brahma is witnessing this or somehow involved in it. And now the gopis here, they're described as the mothers of the different boys. They're described, Prabhupada uses the word elderly gopis, which is, they're not really elderly. Somehow Prabhupada came up with this word, elderly. Elderly is like Grand Krishna's grandparents or great-grandparents, or mothers, great-grandmothers. They would be elderly. Maybe it's better to say adult gopis. So the adult gopis, they are contemporaries of Mother Yashoda. They have boys the same age as Krishna and Balaram. So they're around the same age as Mother Yashoda. I looked up in the Radha Krishna Ganodesh Deepika, a little something about Mother Yashoda. I'll read a couple of verses from that. Krishna's mother's name, Yashoda, is named Yashoda because she bestows, the da part of her name means bestows or gives, Yasha, fame. That's what Yashoda means, one who gives fame. Because she bestows fame on the cowherd residents of Braja. Just like the personification of parental love for Krishna, her complexion is dark and her garments are like a rainbow. Mother Yashoda's body is of medium size, neither large nor small. She has long black hair. Her closest friends are Aindavi and Kirtida. And she has two sisters, Yashodevi and Yashashvini. So these would all be contemporaries of Mother Yashoda. We assume these sisters are approximately the same age. And then there's a list of some of the contemporary associates of Mother Yashoda. Contemporary means, I would think, same age as Mother Yashoda. Some of them, I'll read this list here just to, for our purification. These are the names of some of Mother Yashoda's friends, which means they're involved in this Leela. It's their sons who are actually Krishna. But coming back to them. So here's a list. This is like 30-some names. Vatsala, Kushala, Tali, Medura, Mashrina, Kripa, Sankini, Bimbini, Mitra, Subhaga, Bhogini, Prabha, Sarika Hingula, Niti, Kapila, Dhamanidhara, Pakshati, Pataka, Pundi, Sutanda, Tushti, Anjana, Tarangakshi, Taralika, Subhada, Malika, Angada, Vishala, Sallaki, Vena, and Vartika. So we never run out of interesting combinations of syllables. come up with names of Krishna's associates. So these are the ladies involved in this pastime, these and many others, of course. So this whole pastime takes place in the atmosphere of Ananda, yesterday's verse. Srila Prabhupada quoted the beginning line of the Brahma Samhita verse, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratipavitabhis Tabirya Eva Nijarupa Taya Kalabi Goloka Eva Niva Satya Kilatma Bhuto Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So this verse is generally translated as a reference to the gopis. Actually, I'll read the translation. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, residing in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha resembling his own spiritual figure, the embodiment of the ecstatic potency possessed of the 64 artistic activities, in the company of her confidants, Sukhis, embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form, permeated and vitalized by his ever-blissful spiritual rasa. So the idea here is that when Krishna enjoys, he is enjoying with Radha and the expansions of Radha, and it's all part of the Ananda Chinmaya. It's made of literally Ananda Chinmaya. Maya, not Maya, but Maya, with short A, means made of. So Ananda Chinmaya means made of Ananda and Chit, made of bliss and knowledge. So that's the constitution of Krishna's associates. And they're all, the gopis, especially their expansions of Srimati Radharani, or specifically. But Srila Prabhupada often quotes this line from this verse and uses it in a more general way, a broader way. He would often point out, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, that the rasa of the spiritual world, the flavor, the bliss, the mellows of spiritual activity, spiritual relationships, are in the realm of Ananda Chinmaya. They're also made of Ananda. So everything in the spiritual world that goes on, it's about Ananda. It's about enjoyment. It's about pleasure. And of course, that makes sense because it's God's place. Last time I gave class, I was talking about how by our own sort of reasoning and logic, we get an idea of God, and we may work our way up to the natural understanding. It makes sense that God is very powerful. When we think about God just in our minds, well, he must be the creator, he's the source of everything, and he controls everything, and all this power that we see displayed, well, that's God. But to think of Krishna, that's another step. It's a little harder to take. But of course, we know that, well, certainly there's a logic to Krishna as God. And what is the main point of that logic is, well, naturally, God wants to just play all the time. Why should he work? The conception by speculation that he's always working. Not only is he busy creating and keeping everything together in this world, but he's also judging everybody. So he just has to work all the time. But we say, why should God work all the time? He lets other people do that. He just plays all the time. So that's why Krishna is the most logical, you can say. He makes the most sense. Because he doesn't have to go to work and punch a clock every day like Vishnu does. He just has to enjoy. He just enjoys. Of course, everything Vishnu does is enjoyment too, but from our perspective, it may seem like work. But Krishna doesn't work. He just enjoys. So it's all Ananda. It's all bliss. And everything Krishna does, he does it to churn up the bliss. He creates these things. This whole Leela of Lord Brahma, this is all Krishna's creation, or the creation of Yoga Maya by Krishna's desire. It happens according to Krishna's desire, or in Krishna's response to the desire of his devotees. That we see that this point comes out in this verse today. That Krishna is responding to the desires of the adult gopis, the contemporaries of Mother Yashoda, because they also wanted to have Krishna as their son. Or they were thinking, oh, if he was only my son, then I could get to serve him, take care of him, love him, like Yashoda Devi does. Prabhupada says, this was their inner ambition. So within their hearts, they had this. Of course, in Vrindavan, everyone is already feeling ecstasy. We have to talk about different levels of enjoyment, positive, comparative, and superlative. The positive pleasure of Krishna consciousness is always there. But in comparative, there's better, and then there's best. Prabhupada talks about this in relationship to Lord Brahma, actually. He says there are many kinds of devotees. Because the devotees asked him about Lord Brahma, because actually, Prabhupada came right out and said it one walk in Denver. He said, no, though he said, because of Brahma's mistakes, a couple of mistakes that he made, someone asked if he was a pure devotee, and Prabhupada said, no, Of course, sometimes Prabhupada would answer a question, no, and then he would elaborate, and you see, well, he didn't really mean no exactly. But in any case, he said he's a devotee. He said there are many different levels of devotees. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we see this, how Narada Muni goes and visits these different devotees, and each one says, no, this other person is better than I am, better than I am. And then ultimately we go, in that book, we go all the way up to the residents of Vrindavan and the gopis and so on. So in the relishing of pleasure also, there's positive, comparative, and superlative, and there's extreme. Prabhupada uses this word extreme a couple of times here in the translation. He says, the milk flowed forth from the gopi's breast because of extreme love specifically for Krishna. And then again he says, actually Krishna is everything, but at that time expressing extreme love and affection, they took special pleasure in feeding Krishna. So these gopis, they wanted to experience that extreme pleasure, higher pleasure. Ananda Chinmaya, Anandamaya Bhyasat. We are Ananda by nature. And that Ananda is also Anandam Buddhivardhanam, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in the Shikshastak verse 1. When you chant Hare Krishna, the nectar of the ocean of nectar continues to expand. So Krishna's associates are naturally full of ananda, but that ananda is not static. It's ecstatic. It's always increasing. The nature of ecstasy is that it always increases. Nava nava rasa dhamanyutitam rantamasi. Yamunacharya, he says like that, that since I've attained Krishna consciousness, then my ecstasy just increases. At every moment, I get a new taste. Every taste is a fresh taste, something new and exciting. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? We get once in a while a little taste, something, material or spiritual. Otherwise, it's pretty much humdrum life in material conditioned consciousness, but in ecstatic spiritual consciousness, it's always fresh and new. Every moment is fresh and new, and we can be fully conscious of it. And this is a big thing these days, isn't it? Being in the moment. What is that word that they use? I'm forgetting this. There's a particular word in the New Age vocabulary these days. Mindfulness, I guess, is it. Mindfulness, yeah. So mindfulness means always, whatever, think about what you're doing, basically. We might say be conscious. Of course, Prabhupada also said like that. He would sometimes complain we weren't conscious of what we were doing. We were careless. So it's a good principle to be mindful of what you're doing, but especially mindful of Krishna. Be mindful in Krishna consciousness. We're the International Society for Mindfulness. For Krishna consciousness. What is Krishna consciousness? Real mindfulness. To fix your mind on Krishna. Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo. That's the beginning of engagement in service to Krishna. It's fix your mind on Krishna. So that absorption, that's the status of all of Krishna's associates. So here we see these gopis, they have some desire, and Krishna's fulfilling that desire. So this is another of the points we can say are logical. We have many arguments when we talk about Krishna, of course, and draw out the picture for people so they can have a conception of who God is. So part of his personality, we're trying to understand his personality. That's something amazing that we have in our literature, is that we can understand the mind of God more clearly than anywhere else in any other literature of the world, because he reveals himself to us. The things that he says about himself, he doesn't say in other places. Guhyatamam, they're the most confidential things. Even in Bhagavad Gita, he uses that word. So what to speak about things that come out about him in Vedic literature in other places? They're very confidential. So one of the things about Krishna that we learn is that he responds to desires of the living entity. But he responds in different ways. He fulfills desires, but he fulfills, how he fulfills has to do with the status of the person who is desiring. Yeyatamam prapadyante tang sataiva vijamyaham. So for an ordinary person, he makes certain calculations, you might say. He does a cost-benefit analysis when he's going to fulfill the desires of people in this material world. Well, what's good for this person? Of course, he doesn't have to think long. Krishna knows. He doesn't have to ponder it. But for the sake of discussion, he's thinking, what should be done to help this person? Because if I give this person this thing, is that going to be beneficial? There's a verse that describes this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto. The demigods are offering prayers. Satyam dishatyartitam artito nrinam naivartado yapunar artitam yata swayam vidate bhajitam anichatam icha pidanam nijapadapalavam. So the idea in this verse is that Krishna certainly fulfills the desires of the devotees, the living entities, but he does it with consideration of what will be beneficial for that person. And he doesn't want to fulfill a desire that will make the person keep desiring again and again and again. In a purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada quotes a section from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing this aspect of Lord Krishna, and he's revealing Krishna's mind. Lord Chaitanya is quoting Krishna, paraphrasing Krishna, telling us how Krishna is thinking. Who knows better than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course. So he's telling us how Krishna is thinking when his devotee is asking for something material. Because Krishna doesn't want his devotees, so especially now, talking about aspiring devotees or the sadhaka, when the sadhaka is asking for something, Krishna wants to bring the devotee along in Krishna consciousness. So he thinks, I shouldn't give this person this thing that he's asking for because it will not be beneficial to him. Ami vigya, e murki vishayakeni diba. He says, why should I give this fool, murka, he says, why should I give this fool what he's asking for? Vishay, why should I give this? Because he's thinking foolishly, this devotee of mine is thinking foolishly, e murka, ami vigya. He says, I know better. Why should I give him sense gratification? Swacharanamrita diya, he says. Instead, I'll give him my lotus feet. Swacharanamrita diya, then vishaya bulaiba. Then he will forget about vishaya. So this is Krishna. This is the way Krishna deals with it. He's always trying to help us. So he fulfills the desires, but he does it for our benefit. Of course, for those who are completely antagonistic against Krishna, those who are completely against Krishna, have an antagonistic attitude toward him, he will respond differently. He may give them enough rope to hang themselves if that's what they want. But for his devotee who has shown some inclination to awaken love for him, he wants to help them along the path, all the way along. All the way along, as the creeper is growing, Krishna is helping his devotee progress in Krishna consciousness. This, of course, is one of the essential elements of our faith. The devotee takes it that whatever is happening to me is Krishna's arrangement for me, and it's the best thing for me. We can't see it, we don't understand it, but with a little introspection, we can, of course, understand it, because it's not so much about the situation that is given to us, that presents itself to us, but how we respond to it that matters. We see how the great devotees respond to adverse situations. They take them as opportunities for spiritual advancement. They take them as ways to strengthen their devotional service to Krishna, their devotion to Krishna, their attachment to Krishna. So Krishna sets up situations for us. so we can improve and advance in Krishna consciousness. So this happens to us naturally in our early stages of Krishna consciousness. But Krishna does it also with his closest associates, his intimate devotees. They're actually Krishna's internal potency. We see this same relationship, the same dynamic is going on in Krishna's relationship with his devotees, where he's always encouraging them, bringing them closer in. We see it especially in the pastimes of the gopis, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Krishna's always arranging things. They're having Yoga Maya arrange things to intensify the feeling, strengthen it, and make it more and more relishable in so many varieties of ways. That's also a reason Krishna does all these things, to create variety so that devotees can enjoy in different ways. So we also, of course, we have so many varieties in Krishna consciousness, so many varieties of ways that we can serve Krishna, remember Krishna, become Krishna conscious, and we have to take advantage of those opportunities that are presented to us out of Krishna, by his mercy. So I'll read the translation to these two verses again. O Maharaj Parikshit, Krishna, who had divided himself as different calves and also as different cowherd boys, entered different cowsheds as the calves and then different homes as different boys. The mothers of the boys, upon hearing the sounds of the flutes and bugles being played by their sons, immediately rose from their household tasks, lifted their boys onto their laps, embraced them with both arms, and began to feed them with their breast milk, which flowed forth because of extreme love specifically for Krishna. Actually, Krishna is everything, but at that time, expressing extreme love and affection, they took special pleasure in feeding Krishna, the Parabrahman, and Krishna drank the milk from his respective mothers as if it were a nectarian beverage. Actually, I just wanted to mention one other thing in respect to one of these words in the verse, nirbharanam. So nirbharanam, bhara means a weight. So nirbharanam, the way Prabhupada translates it here, the word before it is paribhaya, so embracing. So it says they lifted the boys and they didn't feel the weight, nirbharam, without weight, let's say. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he connects the word nirbharam sneha snuta, that the milk was flowing from their breasts without any impediment, you can say. So no weight, without any blockage, or without any impediment. You can see the relationship between the concepts and these words. So another way the acharyas are, because sometimes we can do this with Sanskrit, depending on how you connect the words. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does this explanation for nirbharanam. The milk was flowing without, in excess, just without any blockage for Krishna. So any questions or comments? Madam Mohan Prabhu?
It's kind of a technical question. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when in Madhya Lila chapter 22 with Santan Goswami, you're explaining all the different types of expansions of Krishna, the Swayam Prakash, that. So these cowherd boys, they're different color, but are they, how do you fit that, what type of expansion are these cowherd boys?
Well, those different expansions that are in that Swayam Prakash and all of those, that's about as much as a list as I can remember. But their different avatars are in there also. Prabhu Vilas and so on. Actually, this reminds me of something. I won't get off on a tangent, but so these are all Krishna. They're all Vishnu Tattva, except for some of the Shaktyavesh avatars. The rest are all Vishnu Tattva. So these are actually Krishna's internal potency, the cowherd boys, all the residents of Vrindavan. Vrindavan itself, the whole atmosphere of Vrindavan, everything is the expansion of Krishna's internal potency, or Krishna's internal potency personified, you might say, just as Srimati Radharani is Krishna's Ladini Shakti. And that Ladini Shakti also expands, just this, I read the translation of this verse from the Brahma Samhita that says that there are 64 arts. So some of the gopis are personifications of these different arts. You can read this in the commentary on this verse in the Brahma Samhita. So It's all part of Krishna's internal potency. So it's, you might say it's more Krishna than we are, because we're expansions of the marginal potency. So we're a little bit separated, more separated than Krishna's internal potency. So we might say they're more Krishna than we are. Prabhupada says everything is Krishna. In one sense, everything is Krishna. But we know achintya bheda bheda tattva, simultaneously one and different from Krishna. Actually, this Vaibhav Prakash and all these, someone asked Prabhupada one time, because his name was Prabhav Vilas, I think, this devotee. Prabhav, I mispronounced the word, I think it's Prabhav. Anyway, so the devotee asked Prabhupada about it. First, Prabhupada didn't understand what the devotee was asking. Then when he understood, he said, "What, you think the teacher is supposed to know everything in the whole encyclopedia?" he said. So he was like, you know, this is some technical detail. He got a little miffed or something. Then he went on to explain what it meant. Prabhupada knew exactly what it meant. He explained it. So, actually, first Prabhupada thought the devotee said Mayor Baba. And he said, "What? Who is this rascal? Don't talk about this rascal." Because the devotee couldn't pronounce it correctly. Anyway, one of the ladies had a question. Yes.
Comments, which was when we are in adverse situation, that it's not as important what is that situation, but our reaction. And you also mentioned that it's usually in the beginning. And what would you...
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
In case of adverse situation...
The devotee takes adverse situations.
Yes, and our reaction actually counts. So what would you recommend in a situation, and it's not in the beginning for, you know, like... in the beginning of, when there is opposition from a family member for a person to practice Krishna consciousness and to physically be present in temple, it's really not helping one.
Well, there are two sides to the answer, you might say. What I was really referring to was the devotee's attitude in response to the situation. But then there's the other side, which is course of action. That, there's no simple answer to any, because everything is... intricate. Everything is complex. So there's not necessarily one answer to every question. You know, how do we respond to our families or, you know, that kind of thing. It depends. We have to get guidance. We have to pray for guidance. We get guidance in different ways. Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, we get guidance. We get guidance from our associates, from the devotees. We get guidance from prayer, from Krishna from within. And then at some point we have to make a decision. Prabhupada said, use your intelligence. So we get guidance, all the spiritual guidance that we can, and then we rely on our own fortitude, our own, we deliberate and we decide on our own. At some point we have to make a decision and we pray to Krishna that it's the right one. And of course we can always adjust, because we're always taking shelter of Krishna, trying to get inspiration from Krishna. So these things, one thing about Krishna consciousness or life in general, or reality, there's really not much black and white. There are so many shades in every situation. So we constantly have to get guidance from Krishna and others on how to respond in particular situations. Now, of course, our attitude should always be, Krishna is doing this for me. Krishna, please help me do the right thing in this situation. And that, in fact, is more important than what we do externally. Our attitude, our heart, our sincerity, put it in one word, our sincerity is more important than the specific nature of what we do. Just like our services to Krishna, there are so many things. Sometimes we may be faced with a situation, which service should I do? Well, the fact that you want to do service, and you want to do the service that's most pleasing to Krishna, most beneficial to you in your spiritual life, that kind of thinking, that's all spiritual, Krishna-conscious, bona fide thinking. And the particular service you do may not be that important. What's important is the Krishna consciousness that goes into the decision. So that's really what we're nurturing in spiritual life, that consciousness. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Then, of course, when that's fixed in Krishna, just like Prabhupada said, Krishna tells me what to do directly. So that stage will come eventually by sincere endeavor. Dharmaraj Prabhu?
Earlier you were mentioning how some people see God as, you know, just working and not enjoying or having, you know, like Krishna does. So I had an experience of that this past weekend. We were in New Talavan, so they had a festival, Gopuja festival, and all devotees were engaged in all sort of activities, but there was a young hippie couple. They would sit around playing their guitars and sometimes meditating. So the next day in the Sunday feast lecture, I was describing Krishna's pastimes, how he was playing and enjoying like that. And this couple, they were like not very far from me, so he just looked at me and he whispered, "I cannot accept Krishna like this. I cannot accept this." And they walked away. They left them. You know, they just leave the class. So it's like, and give me an idea as to what you're describing. And I have a question, Prabhu, more of a general on this topic. It describes that when Lord Brahma took away the boys and the calves, that he took away the illusory version. And then Krishna manifested all these boys and calves as from his own expansion. So it's a little confusing to me as to, before Lord Brahma took them away, who these boys and calves really were. Were they actual Krishna's expansion that he was playing with them all the time from day one, or that, you know?
No, it seems like Krishna was playing with his actual, his internal potency cowherd boys. And what Brahma took was not them. It was something else. It appeared to be them, but it wasn't. Now, where they went in the meantime, I don't know. Lord Balaram, too, I'm not sure where he is and all while all this is happening. Does anybody know that? That came up recently? I didn't. What is it?
His, his birthday, I think. Well, during that time, that specific day was his birthday, so he was not there. And then...
He was not there?
Yeah. He was home with Mother Yashoda.
Oh, I thought his name came up in this
and
past
then,
somewhere.
Then a year later on, it was his birthday again.
Oh, yeah.
You see, so that's how, but he can, yeah.
Okay, I was confused. I thought his name came up when I was reading this or one of the commentaries. So he wasn't there, and that comes up later, that he didn't know about all this. Yeah. Okay.
I noticed in Krishna pastimes, he exhibits a lot of mystic power. So much, you know, and that bewilders most of the people around, you know, his friends and so forth. But I guess for now, because mystical power is actually absent in this age, you know, there's no one can exhibit mystical power. So this seems to create a great doubt, just like he was saying about this hippie guy, you know, couldn't believe. So because mystical powers are there, you know, Krishna exhibits it, but now because it's absent, this kind of thing creates some doubt in people's mind. Can you shed some light on that?
Not sure I get the gist of your question. When Krishna, you're talking about, no, there's one thing with Krishna exhibiting mystic power, of course, and the mystic power of yogis. That's two completely different things, really. And the yogis are manipulating material energy, and Krishna's mystic power is yoga maya. Their mystic power is mahamaya. It's not, there is, of course, mahamaya comes from yoga maya, but they're really two distinct categories. So is your point that because Krishna exhibited these great powers, then people could see him as God, whereas when people do it today, then people think they're God because they can produce some ashes? Or is that it? I'm not exactly sure what the purport of your question is.
Yeah, because mystical power is absent now.
But it's not absent. Not completely. There are people who produce ashes, and they still have people. There are people who have Prapti Siddhi in different cities. These things are still there. People still have these things. Now, we're not seeing them on Fifth Avenue, but they're there. You go to the Himalayas or go to Kumbh Mela, you might see some. So they're there, and what happens, of course, people think, oh, this is God because he can do that. But what Krishna does is so... Now, Brahma, to the whole point of this is who has more mystic power than Brahma, even in the ordinary.
And it's all, of course, the purposes are different too. Krishna's yoga maya is to awaken bhakti. And Mahamaya is, well, it's to awaken bhakti too, but in a different approach to getting the bhakti out. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.